United States versus Randall, Mr. Hawley.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jonathan Hawley with the Federal Public Defender's Office in the Central District of Illinois, and I represent William Randall in this case. Given the government's concession of error on the question of whether the district court had authority to impose restitution on the dismissed counts in this case, I don't intend to directly address that issue unless the court has specific questions. And I'll go...
I don't know. I was puzzled by this. What? I mean, you can agree in a plea agreement to forms of relief that the judge might not be able to order directly, can't you? I mean, this fellow got an extremely lenient sentence. I don't really understand your appeal, because if we throw out the restitution part of the claim, then your client has to be resentenced. He's certainly going to get more than 60 days in prison.
The only
60 days in jail, because the judge is going to say, look, I'm not going to let you get away with this fraud. I thought you were going to make all the victims whole. Now I'm told I'm not able to do that. Therefore, I have to put you away longer. So I don't know if Randall is really going to be happy if we reverse.
Well, I think that's making an assumption.
Did you explain to him that he might get a longer jail term if he won his appeal?
He's aware of the consequences, Your Honor, but it's
that's
also
not quite an answer to my question.
Yes, I discussed this matter with him, but
and
I also
explained to him that he could get a longer sentence if we reversed.
Yes, but I also think, Your Honor, that it's highly unlikely that the judge is.
Oh, I think it's highly likely myself, because this 60-day sentence is ridiculous. It's ridiculously light, even with restitution. But you see how the judge could say, well, everyone's been paid, there are no losers, therefore I'll give him this slap on the wrist. But 60 days is not much of a punishment if he gets to keep this, $10,000 or whatever it is.
But at the time that he was sentenced, Your Honor, Mr. Randall was indigent. He's indigent now. I don't think the district court realistically expected that Mr. Randall would ever
be
able to
pay. He's not
going to
be indigent forever, right? He's going to work and make money.
But
he's going to be able to pay this modest restitution.
And the restitution was also imposed jointly and severally with his co-defendant, Mr. Bellamini, where at the plea hearing, it was specifically noted that Mr. Bellamini had the financial means to make the victims whole, whereas Mr. Randall does not.
Randall's pretty old, right?
Yes, he is. He's 70 years old, Your Honor.
So his
and
future
he's in extremely poor health as well.
Judge Daigle comments on his health,
yes.
Doesn't he? That's why he made it 2 months instead of six.
Correct, and it was also a grounds for departure. He moved for departure on those grounds, but the judge rejected it as a departure, but imposed a 60-month sentence.
And he said he didn't even think he would make it for 6 months if he put him behind bars?
Correct.
Yeah. So the plea agreement doesn't say anything specific about restitution to other victims, does it?
No, it references restitution generally, that he would agree to cooperate.
Appropriate restitution, words like that.
Correct, but it does not specifically refer to paying restitution to the individuals involved in the dismissed counts.
So this is not a case where he agreed to something in a plea agreement that he didn't have to agree to.
Correct, because clearly this restitution statute in Section A3...
Yes, but at the sentencing, didn't that indicate that his understanding was that he had agreed to pay restitution?
No, everything in the record, if you look at this, it's clear he had an understanding that he was required to pay restitution under because of the count of conviction. Everybody was under that misapprehension. I mean, the district court, Mr. Randall, the government.
That's what he thought he'd agreed to.
No, that's where I would disagree with you, Your Honor, respectfully. What everybody was under the impression that the bankruptcy fraud conviction authorized the imposition of restitution on
it authorized him. Whatever deal he agreed to, and he seemed quite content, and his lawyer at the sentencing, that he was going to pay restitution and have the 60-day and be out in 60 days.
Your Honor, if they were under the impression that Mr. Randall had agreed in his plea agreement to pay restitution to the persons involved on the dismissed counts, two things would be in this record which are not there currently. The statute, Section A3, 3663A3, states specifically that if you make an agreement to pay restitution to people who are not directly harmed on account of conviction, where there's no scheme, conspiracy, or pattern of conduct, it must be in the plea agreement, and it is not in the plea agreement.
Didn't the plea agreement say the offense of conviction and related conduct?
Not towards restitution. It did not say and related conduct. That, when referring to restitution.
My recollection is reading it, it did say that, but you may be correct. But in his version of the offense, Randall admits that his actions caused the loss of $8,687. Right?
Absolutely, and he has never contested that, but loss and restitution are two different concepts. The loss calculation went to determine his guideline range, and he's never contested that that loss amount is relevant conduct. There's the dismissed counts can clearly, under the sentencing guidelines, be considered for purposes of determining the amount of loss because that increased his base offense level by two. But the law is also clear that the under the restitution...
But look, when the judge said, look at page 9 of your brief, the judge says, and the restitution goes to, could have said whom, but he said who. $6,850 to Gibson, $676 to Perry, and so on. And the lawyer for your client, former lawyer, says those numbers are joined in several, as you said, with Bellamine. So the lawyer, on behalf of the client, is reflecting his understanding of their deal.
Your Honor, respectfully, you're assuming that that statement is a reflection of his understanding of the deal. What I'm saying is that statement is a reflection of his misunderstanding of the law, because had they understood it to be a deal, then it would have specifically stated in the plea agreement that they were going to allow restitution on the dismissed count.
You're differentiating between the amount of a loss for sentencing guideline purposes and saying this is what I'll pay in restitution.
Absolutely, and I believe there is a difference because clearly under the guidelines, the dismissed counts are relevant conduct. But clearly under the statute, they're not for purposes of restitution. But had it been an understanding that it was pursuant to an agreement, the restitution statute specifically requires that the agreement be stated in, quote, an plea agreement. It has to be in the plea agreement. Secondly, when the judge imposed judgment in this case, on the judgment and conviction, there is a box which he can check where restitution is being imposed pursuant to a plea agreement.
This,
and that box
you
is not checked.
You say he's indigent, but you're appealing, even though the only what you've said to us, the only possible consequence of the appeal, not a saving of money to him because he's indigent and Bellamini is going to pay everything, the only consequence is he may get a heavier sentence. So what on earth is the purpose of the appeal?
Well, it is possible, as you said when we began this discussion, Your Honor, that he may not be indigent forever. And secondly, if he isn't indigent and he does not pay his restitution, it could be a ground for revocation of his supervised release, further incarceration. I honestly, you may disagree, Your Honor, but based on what occurred in the district court, I honestly don't believe that the district judge would impose a more severe sentence in this case.
But the benefit to your client from the appeal seems really, really speculative.
Well, it's a difference
of
$7,527.
You're really in a fork, because if he's indigent, he's not ever going to pay anything, and Bellamini is going to pay and all that, then your appeal is wholly fruitless and ridiculous. If, on the other hand, he has some income opportunities, and somehow he doesn't make restitution, then he's going to have to either make the same deal on remand, or he's probably going to be sentenced to given a higher sentence.
I'm not entirely certain either, Your Honor, that when you send it back for resentencing, ordinarily you would send it back for resentencing with instructions on the issue to be considered, not the entire sentence as a whole.
Oh no, you have to because he No, you don't do that, because these terms are interrelated. One reason for giving someone a lenient sentence is if you think the victims of the crime are going to be made whole. If you don't think they're going to be made whole, it's perfectly appropriate to impose a heavier sentence. Or put another way to look at it, a different point is, if you think the defendant is going to pay out a lot of money, whether you call it a restitution or a fine, it's a sanction from his standpoint, and so you can go light on the other form of sanction, the jail. So if I were Judge Daigle, I would certainly consider that if the financial part of the sentence had gone away, I would have to reconsider the length of incarceration.
Well, Your Honor, I would respectfully submit that Judge Daigle, when he sentenced him, didn't consider those two factors in conjunction when considering the jail time, and considered the jail time for the reasons that Judge Wood stated. And I do think the Muhammad case, which I cite in my brief, is the case where the case goes back for an alteration in the restitution order. I mean, this court sends cases back for a challenge to acceptance of responsibility or a specific guideline enhancement, where the court just doesn't give the district court on remand free rein to enter any other sentence. But oftentimes,
it's not free rein. He can't raise the sentence vindictively, and he has to have a reason. But we often warn people that one consequence of a successful appeal on a criminal judgment is that if it leads to resentencing, the sentence may be more severe.
Well, I'm aware of that in many of cases.
Prime example. You're not aware of any
situation? No, I said I am aware of that in many cases.
This seems to me a prime example. We have interrelated financial and incarceration terms, and one of them drops out, and then the judge has to re-examine the adequacy of the other. It wouldn't make much. This is not a case in which you have a 10-year sentence plus restitution. I mean, that obviously, 10 years is plenty. This is 60 days. This could be thought to be depreciating the gravity of a white collar crime.
It is 60 days within a guideline range of 0 to 6
months.
Months.
Right.
And
okay.
When they originally went into court,
6 months.
That was the guideline range. In 60 days is a significant sentence within that guideline range. It's two-thirds.
Has he already served the time?
Yes, he has already served the time.
What are his health problems?
I believe he has heart arrhythmia, and he discussed with me that he has cancer. I don't know if that's in the district court record, but that is what he discussed with me.
Okay. Well, thank you, and Mr. Hawley. Ms. Bonamici?
May it please the court, counsel, good morning. Your Honor, government agrees, the defendant agreed to the entry of the particular sentence that the judge set forth.
But you do agree that it wasn't in the plea agreement, that it was just at the actual sentencing hearing that you say this agreement occurred.
We agree that there's not a specific agreement in the plea agreement that the defendant
right.
would pay restitution either to these specific victims or to the victims of
right.
relevant
it just
conduct.
Leads it to the background.
We agree to that, yes.
Now, you're familiar, I'm sure, with the cases in which there are appeal waivers in various kinds of plea agreements. And when the appeal waivers say you can't appeal any aspect of your sentence or bring a 2255, we've allowed appeals about restitution.
I'm familiar with that, Your Honor.
Because restitution is a little bit different from the term of years or the period of supervised release. So do you agree with Judge Posner that if we were to order reconsideration of restitution, his term of years is also open? Well, let me put it this way. We certainly could remand for as much as we wanted to, but could we do a limited remand?
Your Honor, I have to say that is not an issue that I considered. And as I sat there listening to Judge Posner's comments, what struck me was how his view is actually another very good reason why this judge should, or why this court should find that the fourth prong of the plain error analysis is not met and declined to exercise its discretion in addressing this error. Because I don't know offhand, and it's not something that I looked at, so I don't want to answer that.
Certainly in the plea waiver situations, we have sent things back only on restitution.
That's right. But I agree with Judge Posner that the total package that was agreed upon or set forward by Judge Daigle did take into consideration all of the aspects of the sentence, including or of the defendant, including the fact that previously he had a very similar fraud experience. And
tell me again why the plain error should not apply here.
Well, Judge, the government agrees that there was an error and that it was plain, and that $7,000 is...
Well, I thought I just unheard you say that plain error should not apply.
So what we say is that the court should not exercise discretion by find that the fourth prong, that is, that the recognizing plain error, or the plain error must be recognized in order to avoid a miscarriage of justice in this case. We don't think that that is accurate. We think that the Supreme Court has made it clear that plain error should only be addressed in very limited circumstances, and those circumstances don't apply here. That's because, in this case, the defendant did, in fact, agree to the payment of restitution, in fact, not as a legal matter in the plea agreement, the government concedes that, but as a matter of fact, when the defendant at sentencing agreed to or interjected joint and several, he agreed to two aspects of that. He agreed to the government's numbers, which was what the defense counsel said. Those numbers should be joint and several. And he also agreed specifically to the payment to those particular victims, Mr. Cherry and Mr. Gibson, because those were the only two victims who were victimized jointly and severally by Mr. Bellamini and by the defendant. Ms. Luna Perez...
Do you know if restitution's been made?
Pardon me?
Do you know if restitution's been made?
It's not in the record, and I don't know. But the history of Mr. Bellamini's case, I believe, was brought out in the defense brief, and that is that it did not go as swimmingly as the government counsel had predicted at the time of the change of plea. So I don't know the answer to that. I think that's true. I think the idea that the other defendant might pay restitution is speculative, and in a way it cuts both ways. Because on one hand, if he's going to pay it, then what's the harm to the defendant? There's no need to address plain error in this case. And on the other hand, if he's going to pay it, then why should the defendant be saddled with this judgment that is really a nullity? So from the government's perspective, this is a case where, in truth, all of the parties agreed to the payment of restitution, and we would disagree with the perspective that the parties believed that restitution was required in this case. That was an issue that just wasn't addressed. It didn't come up in anyone's mind. It's clear from when you read the record the question was resolved by agreement.
Well, that's why this is a forfeiture. Nobody had any idea, having not gone back and read the restitution statute, that there was this distinction between elements that require scheme or, you know, conspiracy and other kinds of offenses.
Well, Your Honor, what I would say to that is that the part of this that is a forfeiture certainly is the failure to recognize the specificity of the restitution statute, the statute's requirements. But the part of it that's a waiver is the agreement to pay the restitution. The substantive agreement, the government contends, was really raises a waiver issue because that was substantively agreed to by the defendant.
Our first case this morning dealt with whether we could find an agreement when somebody was fundamentally misinformed about the situation.
And Your Honor, I think that's a very interesting point, and I listened to that very carefully, but this defendant was not fundamentally misinformed. This defendant understood that in order to reach a plea agreement with the government, he was going to have to make some sort of concession with respect to restitution. What the parties didn't think to do was to memorialize that specific aspect.
So we should always assume that omissions in plea agreements would be resolved in the government's favor?
Absolutely not, and the government is not contending that that's the case. But in this particular case, a reading of the whole record, I think, indicates quite clearly that that was the defendant's viewpoint and frame of mind at the time, and in fact, all the parties.
I don't even know. I don't understand. I don't actually understand your concession of error. I thought your basic argument was that the agreement, what they actually agreed to, even though it was imperfectly memorialized, was this prostitution. What?
No.
Why does the plea agreement have to be...
Here's what we can see with an error. The statute requires that it be in writing, in the written plea agreement. And that was not done.
The statute requires what?
That the agreement to pay
restitution
to victims other than the victims of the offense, the specific offense, be in writing, be in the written plea agreement. That's the one that wasn't
done. So the numbers weren't in the agreement.
Nor is anything about paying these other victims.
Well, the numbers were in the agreement, but only as to the amount of loss, not as to restitution.
Right, but restitution was silent on the topic of numbers.
It just says, and the court will order restitution, period. It doesn't say how much.
And we have a window, I've got a white light, we have a window into that thought process when you see the defendant's version that he submitted prior to sentencing. And what he says is that he admits that he caused the whole loss, but he didn't get all the money. And the court may find that restitution in a smaller amount may be appropriate. It's clear that what the defendant was thinking, the piece that the defendant was looking to possibly fight about, was whether he should have to pay restitution when he didn't get all the money, which obviously as a matter of law is not even an issue. But that was the focus of the defendant. I mean, from reading the record, to the extent that you can read the parties' minds and you can see what they were thinking, and that's tricky sometimes. But in this particular case, it's clear that was the only issue.
Is that specificity with regard to restitution a new aspect of the regulations, or has it been there for some time?
It is relatively new, but it was in place at the time.
Well, I understand it was in place in time, but I'm saying it's relatively new.
I don't remember the date upon which the statute was enacted, but it's relatively new. But the basic principle here, it seems to us, is that Your Honor has discretion in a case like this. And it's not an appropriate case to exercise discretion for a number of reasons. One, because the defendant honestly agreed to it and it was understood by the parties, and that's reflected by the record. And two, this is the problem here is really a technicality. The only problem that we're dealing with here is the fact that this agreement was not memorialized in the written plea agreement.
Is this statutory requirement of specifying the amount has to be specified in the plea agreement?
It's not the amount. It's the agreement to make payment to victims who are not technically victims of the offense of conviction.
Is this non-waivable?
Excuse me?
Is this a non-waivable requirement?
Well, I think you could argue that it was, because it's a question of the court's statutory authority to order restitution. So I think there's an argument to be made in favor of non-waivability of that provision. But
you've sort of assumed non-waivability, haven't you? Because there's certainly an argument that the discussion of the sentencing hearing was a waiver of any
objection
to this failure to comply with the statute.
Right, but the law states that the court's jurisdiction to order restitution is a matter of statute.
Yeah, you're talking about 3663 capital A C2, right?
Correct.
It has in the case of a plea agreement that does not result in a conviction for an offense described in paragraph 1, this section shall apply only if the plea agreement specifically states that an offense listed blah, blah, blah.
And you think that's jurisdictional?
I think yes, I do. That's our basic view of it. I could be wrong about that, but the primary, I mean, I don't think this court needs to even reach that issue. I think this is really a matter of discretion under the plein air standard.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Amici.
Thank
you. Mr. Hawley, your time ran out, but if you'd like another minute to rebut, that's fine.
Briefly, Your Honor, I believe that it is jurisdictional because, as I point out in my brief, restitution is a creature of statute. The court has no independent authority to impose restitution, and that is one of the grounds why this court should reverse and exercise its discretion under the plain error standard of review. This is a different type of error than a typical sentencing error where a judge makes a legal determination within the guidelines or what have you, where the judge still has a source of authority for the overall sentence that he or she is imposing. Here, because of the fact that the count of conviction doesn't authorize restitution and the plea agreement portion of the restitution statute is not authorized, there is no source of authority for the order of restitution in this case. It's similar to
very artificial, but that's okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. And you were appointed, were you not?
I was.
Okay, well, we thank you for your vigorous efforts on behalf of